Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews the CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes.
My special guest today is Terry Takai, the Defense Department's Chief Information Officer. Terry, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
You've been CIO at DOD now for about 18 months, so give me a sense. I know it feels like probably forever, but it's a short amount of time to be a CIO in the government. How's it going? How tough has that learning curve been?
Well, it's really been, I have to say, the most rewarding professional experience that I've ever had. It's just an honor and privilege to be here at Department of Defense and to really play a part in all of the important things that the department does, and also to be able to support the men and women in uniform. That challenge is one of the things that keeps you going, because it has been an interesting learning curve. Interestingly enough, the technology issues across the organization have two parts to them. One is the overall way that we utilize technology to exchange information has a lot of similarities to other roles that I've had. But clearly the need to focus that into a warfighter perspective has been very different. And then the size and complexity of the organization as we're looking at information technology policy has been a very steep learning curve.
Now, I know you came from California as the state CIO for California, so it's another big state, one of the obviously biggest states in the U.S. How does that compare in terms of the challenges of getting, as you talked about in the first part, about exchanging information, making sure that enterprise-wide services are set up, those types of things? How does that compare to your experience in California?
Well, I think it's a size and scope issue. The things that we're working to do in terms of moving to the enterprise model, as you mentioned, and what does it mean to do that, the objectives are very much the same, but the dynamics of making that happen are in an organization that is 10 times the size in terms of our information technology spend, in terms of our the number of individuals affected, but even more so when you look at what our reach is from a geographic standpoint, being able to operate in over 6,000 locations around the world, and that's just sort of our larger installations, is very different from doing it in even state as large as California.
Now, your role has been very highly watched for a number of years. It was a dual-hatted role with the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Network Information Integration. Recently, Deputy Secretary of Defense Ash Carter issued a memo changing that role. So give me a sense of what that means for you as the CIO, no longer being the ASD NII.
Many of my responsibilities really remain the same. One of the reasons for wanting to do the title change was to really be much more directed towards the role that a CIO plays here at DOD in terms of setting policy for the overall information technology architecture and direction. The piece that's really changing is that we were doing some selected acquisition functions, and many of those very specific process roles will be moving to AT&L, and my role in the acquisition process will be very much around how our acquisitions conform to our overall infrastructure direction. The other reason for the change was really to enhance and emphasize the close working relationship now between the CIO and all of the organizations that are focused on our cyber operations. And so that's a close working relationship with U.S. Cyber Command, as well as with the services and the combatant commands as we move into looking at how we need to be much more protected from a cybersecurity perspective.
Now, this may be hard for you to answer since you came into this role, as we talked about, only about 18 months ago, but a lot of people would tell you that not having that Assistant Secretary of Defense title within the CIO kind of lessens the clout that maybe a CIO holds. Do you see that just from your short time of experience, that if you, without that title, it's harder to get a seat at the so-called table?
Well, I think to your point, it's still really too early to tell. The memo actually signing this out was really just done in the recent period of time, and we are in the process of standing up our organization. We're in the process of putting out a charter and rechartering what the new organization is going to be. And I think once we get those established, then we're going to be able to tell better whether or not not having the Assistant Secretary of Defense title is going to be a problem for us in terms of exerting our authorities.
All right, so a couple things maybe to follow up with you in the near to immediate future. What is that charter? What's the status of that charter? Do you expect it to be out in the next month, next week? Give me a sense.
No, my sense is that we will get it out internally for discussion in the next month, but I've learned that those kinds of documents do take some time for us to be able to get a complete understanding. So it'll be sometime, I suspect, in the next quarter that we'll be able to make that charter public.
And you don't necessarily expect huge changes in the charter. I mean, obviously, some things will change to some of the acquisition, but overall, the CIO role that you do now, could you take a guess that's 80% the same, 90% the same?
Yes. Is the same. What we're doing through the charter is actually to make sure that we have that clearly delineated. Our former charter was really quite old before the advent of many of the changes in technology that are hitting us today. So you're absolutely right. You will not see dramatic change, but I think that what you will see is greater clarity in the role.
You also mentioned that the fact is some of the biggest change to giving up the ASD NII role is the acquisition piece. Now, a lot of that is going to be moved into the acquisition technology and logistics. Give me a sense of how DoD, which has said many times, we want to be more agile, we want to buy technology different than DoD buys weapon systems. From a policy perspective, because that's where you come in, how do you get DoD there? Give me a sense of the role that you still will play around IT. You mentioned, around enterprise architecture to kind of simplify it.
I think that it's very important. Our role from an acquisition perspective is, number one, that we will be establishing what the overall architecture for DoD needs to be. For instance, one of the things that's going to be very important is the way that we're standardizing and the way that we're actually moving to that standardization through our data center consolidation, our virtualization, and our moving into a cloud type of concept as it relates to delivering infrastructure and platform, and then being able to move into services. So that's the biggest piece of the policy that we will be establishing so that the acquisition process can then utilize that. But in addition to that, we're also looking at some of the process-related areas that are important in terms of being able to meet what was laid out in the 804 report to Congress around IT acquisition reform. And the place that we're particularly focused is on putting out guidelines working with AT&L around what it means to do agile development and what is it that DoD needs to do in order to be able to accomplish that objective.
And when you say guidelines, is this policy or is this more of a best practices type thing?
It's more best practices related. The policy will actually be included in, as many of you know, the DoD 5000 process. So we have been inputting to that process. And then where we go from there is to put out working documents that actually outline the best practices and, if you will, a bit more practical concepts in terms of how we actually implement.
And is DoD in the middle of the 5000 rewrite?
Yes, they are. And they're moving towards many changes to the DoD 5000. AT&L, as you know, is responsible for that. And we have been working very closely with them in terms of being able to include the IT acquisition recommendations.
All right. You gave us a little bit of a heads up of some of your priorities and IT efficiencies. You mentioned cloud. You mentioned virtualization. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to hit upon those topical areas. But in the meantime, you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Terry Takei, the Defense Department Chief Information Officer.
This heavyweight bout is about to begin. The challenger wears white trunks with a blue stripe, and the champ is wearing, looks like an examination gown from the doctor's office. And from the back, we can... Ooh, that's not pretty. Champ, what's with the crazy getup?
I've got to take care of my family.
Yeah, so?
When you love your family, you got to go in and get those important medical screens. A lot of potentially deadly diseases can be treated if you catch them in time.
So you wear the examination gown because...
Because I'm a real man. Real men take care of their families and get those tests. Real men wear gowns.
Okay, champ. Good luck. Here we go. The champ's not wasting any time. fight is over. Champ, you barely broke a sweat. Any words for your fans out there?
Remember, go to AHRQ.gov for a list of the tests they need to get and when to get them.
What was that web address again?
AHRQ.gov. And remember, real men wear gowns.
Go to AHRQ.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AHRQ, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Terry Takai, the Defense Department Chief Information Officer. Now, Terry, before break, we were talking a little bit about your role, the changes that are coming, the charter, and you mentioned a couple things, data center consolidation, virtualization, the cloud-type concept. Give me a sense of the progress you're making toward your 2012 goals and beyond, and what's the latest on some of those, the bigger ones like data center and cloud and virtualization?
Well, I'd like to just start out by talking a bit about the IT efficiency effort, because there's an aspect of it here at DOD that's extremely important, and that is while we are moving very, very dramatically in the effort to really look at how we can be more efficient in the way we use IT, the other important aspect is that as we drive to more consolidation and standardization, we're actually increasing our ability to protect our networks and our information from a cybersecurity perspective. So we've started to change our terminology a bit from being IT efficiency to being IT effectiveness, because we think that that includes both the cyber aspect of what we're doing as well as the efficiency effort. And I think that's an important concept. Now, we're making great progress. I think that we've all started, all of the federal agencies certainly have started from the 25-point plan. We focused on our data center consolidation effort. Right now, we're making great progress. We closed 57 data centers in FY11. We're scheduled with a projection of 61 in 2012, but now it looks like we'll be able to increase that target to 97. And our overall plan is to come down from 772 data centers to 480 data centers by FY14.
Why are you able to increase from 61 to 97? Is it the change in definition and you're closing down some smaller ones, or are you just finding some efficiencies in how you close down data centers?
What's the latter, really? What we're finding is that as we're going into the data centers, we're getting more familiar and comfortable with what each of the data centers are doing. The services are doing a terrific job in terms of looking not only at floor space, but also at applications and duplication in the applications that we're running, as well as virtualization. And as we're getting into more detail, as you could expect, we're finding opportunities that we didn't recognize when we first did the initial look at numbers of data centers.
Now, I know that, for instance, the Army has a data center consolidation, the APCs. DISA is offering their services through the DISA DEX. Where are you seeing the data centers being consolidated into? Or right now, most of the services and DoD agencies staying kind of internal consolidation, meaning they're using capacity that otherwise wouldn't be used? Or are you starting to see them go to what some call shared service centers, specifically maybe DISA or maybe another DoD agency?
Well, it's a combination of all of those things. The major number of reductions that we're seeing is, in fact, within each one of the services. So each of them is doing a data center reduction, and they're consolidating based on several factors. Number one, they're moving to virtualized platforms, which, of course, as you know, reduces their footprint and reduces the amount of floor space that's needed. But second, as I mentioned, getting rid of applications that are redundant also allows you to be able to make better use of your existing data centers. So that's the primary objective. But we are seeing Army, and in some cases Air Force, starting to look at how they might move, particularly those areas that could become enterprise, into the DISA DEX and then become more of an enterprise service. And that's really what Army has done as they've looked to consolidate their email.
Let's talk about that email consolidation a little bit. Obviously, Army's got on the bandwagon first. There's a lot of people watching. Obviously, Congress is paying close attention. Where do you see this going? Do you see this eventually all the services will move to an enterprise email concept? Whether it's a DISA or not, it's hard to say, but where do you see this effort going?
Absolutely. The whole purpose behind having the enterprise email service, and certainly with Army taking the lead, and we've learned an enormous amount both in terms of what Army has today in their existing email and network infrastructure, but of course in learning how to move very large organizations onto a standard enterprise email. It's our intention that at the completion of Army, Air Force will begin to move to the enterprise email, and we're working with Navy now. It's very important that we move across DoD, and email really in many ways is a forcing function, because what we need to get to is a single directory, and with that, a single identity management solution. And both of those things then give us the ability to do collaboration across DoD in a way that we've not been able to, or we've been able to do it before, but it's only been within pockets that we've been able to do collaboration, and we've had to set it up each time we've done it. So, for instance, if you go into a deployed force, very often they have to set up the opportunity to be able to collaborate within those individuals that they work with on a daily basis. We'd like to make that a lot easier, a lot quicker, and part of the way that the enterprise operates.
So the Air Force, have they actually said they would move to enterprise email next? Because I know that there's been some discussion and there's been some concern. I remember going to conferences and hearing people talk about enterprise email and say, well, we're not sure yet, we're still looking at it. Have they committed?
Air Force has committed that they're moving to enterprise email, but I think it is important to note that there are always going to be concerns in moving to an enterprise service. It is important that people feel comfortable that they're going to get the same level of service that they got before, that it's going to be done in a cost-effective manner. So it's certainly understandable that people would be concerned about it, particularly since we're just in the middle stages, if you will, of getting Army up. So it's not unusual that people would express those kinds of concerns, even if, in fact, there is a desire to move forward on the part of the Air Force.
And just so I'm clear, just so there's no confusion, they may move to enterprise email, but is that with DISA, or that's not sure yet, but they'll definitely just move to an enterprise email service, whether they host it internally or they go external to DISA?
Right now, the plan is to move to DISA, and that is part of the discussion that Air Force is currently having with DISA in terms of what would be the right approach going forward.
Okay. Well, thanks, because I just want to make sure, because, you know, sometimes people talk about enterprise email, but you know, if I come up with something that says, well, they're moving to DISA, I don't want to get a call from you upset. So, you know. Let me talk a little bit about you. You also mentioned one other thing about the identity management single directory. That, what I'm hearing is so important, the access control piece, the roles and responsibilities. Once this enterprise email gets set up within the Army and it moves to the other services, when you look down the road 3, 5, 7 years from now, do you see a different DoD in terms of how the IT infrastructure works because of this ID management piece?
Oh, I do, definitely. I think, first of all, it's going to give us the opportunity to use that common directory as the basis to implement many of the collaboration tools that we have today, but doing it more on an enterprise-wide basis. And so, for example, I could see a situation where if, in fact, we have to set up an operation someplace brand new, that rather than building the tools from the bottom up and actually having to bring in hardware, then bring in and set up new firewalls, set up new services, that it would be a plug-in to the enterprise services and people would be able to come up with that functionality without having to rebuild it all. And that's really the concept that we're really shooting for. And I believe that by working with the services, we're going to be able to move in that direction, in the next time period.
And now any discussion around ID management's got to go back to the common access card, obviously accreditation-based access control. Give me a sense of where DoD is going with that. I understand there's at some point some discussion about moving not CAC cards, but a PKI type access control to the CIPRNet, the secret network. Where are you at with that CAC card? Where do you see that going as it relates to this idea of identity management?
Well, I think, as you know, on our unclassified networks, we're effectively 100% deployed as it relates to the common access card. And we're moving to our classified networks, and we are on track and planning to complete that this year.
I know there's some sensitivities around it, so you probably can't talk too much about it, but give me a sense of where you're going next with the CAC. Obviously, there's been a lot of discussion around potentially using it as an electronic wallet, use it for transit benefits. That all kind of plays into that same role as access control and defining roles and responsibilities.
Well, the first place that we want to make sure that we're using the PKI and the Common Access Card is to make sure that we're moving from just validating that the user can get onto the network to actually begin linking that to the information that that individual can actually see and use. And that's what we call attribute-based access control, where we're going to use the attributes of the information to start defining who, what information an individual can see. And that's really how we move forward in better addressing and more completely addressing the issues on insider threat. So that's going to be the next piece of where we move.
You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Terry Takai, the Defense Department Chief Information Officer. Now, Terry, before break, we were talking a little bit about the Common Access Card and PKI. One thing that people talk about when it comes to roles and responsibilities is how cloud fits into this. You mentioned cloud a little bit earlier. Give me a sense of where do you see DoD going around cloud? I think a lot of it's going to be private cloud, I guess.
Well, we're in the process right now of putting together a cloud computing strategy and hope to get it out within the next month. And it really does address all aspects of what we believe DoD needs to look at in terms of cloud computing. First of all, we believe that cloud computing and the whole concept of services is a very important concept for us going forward, not only from the standpoint that it gives us the opportunity to get capability out much more quickly, but we will be able to protect that capability in a much better way than we can today, where our functionality is distributed all over across 15,000 networks. Now, you are right. Initially, we will be moving much more to private clouds so that we can make that a part of our data center and consolidation and our virtualization. So we'll be moving to private clouds within that, but we'll also be looking at increasing the level of private cloud capability by DISA. Now, from that, that will give us a much better understanding of where we can engage from a commercial cloud perspective, and we're planning to actually be able to put out a document that the commercial companies can look at to say, in order to satisfy the cloud needs of DoD, this is what we will be expecting. So we think that that whole effort will not only enhance our ability where we need to be able to work from our private clouds, but also will give us a better idea of being able to work with all of the industry partners on where they can help provide cloud services to us.
And we're talking about two different documents. You're talking about a strategy around how DoD will move forward with cloud, and then you also almost take a next level down of specifics for commercial cloud providers. Is that correct?
That's correct. And we'll be starting from the FedRAMP program, because the FedRAMP program is a great start in terms of laying out the NIST requirements for a cloud provider for the federal government. And so we're going to be, we've been very, very active. We're one of the co-chairs on the FedRAMP committee. And so we'll be starting again with the FedRAMP requirements and then looking at how they're specifically applicable to DoD.
You bring up FedRAMP, and I think it's a fascinating concept. When I talk to CIOs, both on the record and off the record, there's a lot of caution that they're saying. We're not sure if we're going to use it. They want to see how it goes. How do you alleviate some of their concerns? What can you tell them to say, listen, you as DoD, which has probably one of the most biggest needs for security, you seem to be comfortable with it as one of the co-chairs. What kind of words of advice or wisdom can you give to other CIOs?
Well, I think that we all as CIOs need to make sure that we have a direction for ourselves internally. You know, there's no external document that is the magic bullet that solves all of our problems, but it is important, first of all, that we have an understanding of our existing environment. And then once we have that, we can better take a look at FedRAMP and understand how FedRAMP can fit within what we need to do for our individual agency. You know, each of the agencies is a little different in terms of how they face out to the public, what their cybersecurity needs are, what they support. And so I think each of the CIOs needs to look at FedRAMP in that light. But having said that, And again, as you say, we were very active in the effort, so maybe that's a part of it. But I do believe that FedRAMP sets out a set of requirements that are very important in terms of our interaction with our industry partners going forward.
And obviously you guys plan to make full use of FedRAMP for low and moderate level systems.
Yes. Yes.
All right. That's a good emphatic yes, because I think people will take that to a heart, knowing that, as I said, you have a pretty tough security requirements that the people have to meet. Well, we're almost out of time, but before I let you go, I did want to catch up with you. You talked about vendors a lot. What should vendors know about the transformation from an IT standpoint that DoD is going through right now?
Most important thing for our industry partners to recognize is that we are moving to more standardized, more service-oriented architectures. So we'll be looking less to building capability from what I call the ground floor up or the entire stack. We'll be moving toward actually starting with the standard platforms that we have and then looking at how we build capability on that much faster. And so those will be the areas that I think are going to be a change. We're looking to streamline some of the processes that we use to be reflective of these standardized devices. You know, it's interesting that we all blame the acquisition process for it taking anywhere from 81 to 91 months to field new capability. But in many cases, it's not the, quote, acquisition process per se. It's the way that we look at our technologies. It's the way that we look at building on standard platforms. And it's the fact that we each like to build within our own individual silos. So for the acquisition organization, they're just being reflective of some of the challenges that we have overall. So I think it's important that our industry partners know that that's a major piece of where we're going.
Very nice. I bet we could talk much longer, but unfortunately we are out of time. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my very special guest this week was Terry Takei, the Defense Department Chief Information Officer. Terry, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Oh, no, I enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.